You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavor swirling together with cold brew, topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles, and that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. You can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. You can also donate to the podcast by going to CanadaEHX.com and clicking Donate. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Antonio Caone. He is an actor who has appeared in numerous TV shows and in several Hallmark movies, including one that just came out that we're going to get to in our interview. He's a really cool person to talk to. He's involved in a lot of really neat things, and I really enjoyed my conversation with him. So let's get right to it. So what have you been up to over the past few months as we all deal with COVID?
Oh, man. These past few months have been wild, I guess, for everybody. In addition to working as an actor, I also I'm part of a restaurant group called Collective Hospitality. So myself and three partners and kind of a constellation of integral members to the operation have just been running the restaurants. During the pandemic, we launched something called the Staff Meal Initiative. So that really kept us on our toes. The word of the year was pivot, right? And so yeah. Every small business has been counting their pivot. And we're at 17 different pivots. We just kind of keep coming up with business models, keep the lights on. So that's largely what I've been doing. And then when I'm not on set and when I'm not there, I'm just like full-time at home, because the other side of this pandemic that's been pretty surprising and I think certainly destabilizing for certain age groups has been how children are reacting to it. And I have a 2.5-year-old who, does not really understand what's happening, but he does understand that he can't see his friends and his grandparents. And so it thrusts us into the position of, parent and authority figure, as well as primary playmate, as well as imaginary friend, as well as anything else you can imagine. So it's pretty full time and it's great.
So as with a lot of people, you kind of have a plan for your life of what you want to do. And then something happens and you kind of, like you said, you pivot to something else. So you originally wanted to play soccer and then you kind of transitioned into acting. So how did you kind of make that move into acting?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to play soccer. I don't know I was good enough, I'm not going to lie. When I was a kid, I thought I was great. And I played pretty competitively up until a certain point, but I could definitely see that there were people around me that were further ahead. I just had a really good work ethic. And so to say that I wanted to play soccer is both the dream as a kid and a little bit of naivety. But if I actually dial it back, when I was in grade 7, I ended up auditioning for the show that ended up being called Kids TV and went on to become Popular Mechanics for Kids. And so that was kind of my first foray into this world. I didn't know what it was. I hadn't really, necessarily considered acting as an option. I wasn't a kid who dreamt outside of what I understood. My parents were teachers. I'm sure that had certain things not intervened in my life, that's where I would have ended up. Mm-hmm. Because that was what was modeled for me. That's what I kind of knew to be available. But I discovered acting. I would say acting got put in my way a few times, and I would bump into it, do it, and then kind of go around and do something else, and it would get put my way again. I'd be like, oh, that's strange, this keeps showing up. So it wasn't until high school that I injured myself, and a guidance counselor kind of like saw how the system worked and put me in drama classes because they didn't need prerequisites. Mm-hmm. And I worked my tail off, and kind of the rest is history. I mean, I found my way into theater school by the good graces of a teacher who forced me to send in an application, and I got into theater school and didn't know what I was doing, but I had some wonderful teachers around me, made some, forever friends, and here I am.
Nice. Christmas in Evergreen, Bells Are Ringing, I think is the fourth in that kind of Christmas is in Evergreen, right? Or is Evergreen. So tell me a bit about the movie that's coming out, I think December 7th, I think.
December 5th on Hallmark and 6th on W Network. So, okay. So the Canadian the Canadian contingent gets to watch it a day later, which I think W Network is getting a lot better actually about getting movies quickly, which is pretty exciting. It used to you'd wait like a week or two or three or never to see it. So the Christmas in Evergreen series, 1, 2, 3, 4, is a series of installations about a town where Christmas is perfect. You know, snowmen and snow angels and musical festivities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hallmark has a lot of towns like this, but Christmas in Evergreen somehow took off as like the place to be. And so each installation usually sees someone drop into the town, fall in love with someone from the town, and either stay or go. With part four, we're not seeing that same model. We're seeing two people, Hannah and Elliot, who are from the town, who have been in the town and been best friends since childhood, and who have slowly cultivated a relationship and really risked it all to see, is there something more here? Because they have these big feelings for each other. And so in episode or installment, I don't know what they're called, but in part four, you watch Hannah and Elliot navigate the nuances of a relationship that is intersected by their ambitions and their goals and the things they want for themselves and the way in which they identify. And that's all against the backdrop of a town that's also kind of doing the same thing. You see Carol and Joe, who are fixtures in the town, and you know, they're at a point in their lives where they want to reinvent themselves. And same thing with Holly, who plays Michelle, the mayor. She's about to get married. And so the town really comes to life, and the Robbins sisters, the twins, the Cooper sisters on the show, the Robbins in real life. But you really get to delve into how the town functions kind of as its own person. How did the town make the people the way they are?
And then you've done quite a few Hallmark movies. Is there something that you like about the movies? Is it you get to kind of work with the same people, or just the tone of the movies is, you know, they're so positive and happy movies?
Yeah, I didn't know about Hallmark before I moved to Vancouver, in fact. and so it was this real discovery that I like stumbled into these like sweet, wholesome, happy ending movies. And had you asked me 10 years ago what I wanted to do, it's like, dark, broody, like I want to end up on HBO. And then I find myself in this world that I kind of love. Like it really is quite positive and wholesome. And like I said, I have a young kid at home, and I think a lot about what types of things I can sit on the couch and watch with him. And I would feel very comfortable, you know, with him seeing this world. So there are a few things that I think that Hallmark really nails, and chief among them is the casting. I would say that every time I get on set for a Hallmark, and this is what I do think I love the most, is that you meet these people who are generous and kind and positive and happy to be there. And they're all at different points in their career. Some of them are like industry veterans who paved the way for the way television is now. Some of them are uber green. Some of them are like, you know, we've been digging our whole lives, and all of a sudden we find ourselves on this place. And yet you can really come together and see each other and learn quite a bit. I talk about on Christmas in Evergreen 4, there's a ton of fantastic actors. And there's a guy named Daryl who plays Henry Miller. And at a glance, if you read the call sheet, you don't know who he is. I know who he is because I grew up in Ontario reading plays. And every time I would open a new play, there's this guy, Daryl Shuttleworth. And I would be like, who is he? And so you end up on set with somebody who is a fixture in the canon of Canadian theater. And the stories that he's able to offer you are outstanding. So I really do think that there's something in the casting of Hallmark that draws me to it time and time again.
Now, with the Hallmark movies, outside of that, you've been on The Colony, you've been on The Magicians, X-Files. Do you still find yourself getting a bit starstruck when you know, some of the people that you interact with on these shows that you've maybe watched on TV before?
Yeah, 50-50. So here's a weird thing. I've never been a person who's really starstruck, but there are certain stars that strike me. And so I've had to really ask myself why that is. You know, I grew up watching Prison Break, and then I found myself on Prison Break, and I was like, man, hey guys, it just didn't faze me. Whereas standing in front of like Gillian Anderson, I lost my mind. I couldn't get words out. And so it's not so much about, I'm kind of influence struck. there are people that I think have really shaped the industry or shaped the way I think sometimes, shaped things that I think, things that I believe to be possible. Like Holly on Christmas Evergreen is a great example. I mean, it's almost impossible to be starstruck around her. And yet her access is to people who I look up to as having created the foundation that allowed me to do what I do. Mm-hmm. And so every so often, things like that just get me. And currently on Mighty Ducks, I thought it would be Emilio Estevez that I was starstruck over, because I was like deep into the ducks fly together, flying deep, like that was my language. And yet I'm from Canada and Letterkenny exists. And so I remember getting on the shuttle and seeing Dylan Playfair and being like, well, I can't talk for the rest of the day because there's someone from Letterkenny on the bus. Like, that was my starstruck.
Absolutely. I 100% get the Gillian Anderson being starstruck, because I would be the exact same way. Teenage Craig would be losing his mind if that was me. So
yeah. And she's and like, as is supposed to happen, she keeps getting better. I mean, I saw her in the fall. I thought she was amazing. I watched Sex Education. I couldn't even wrap my head around what a brilliant character she made.
Yeah.
And now a friend of mine has bullied me into watching The Crown because it wasn't really on my list. Mm-hmm. And the reason I started watching was that I heard Gillian Anderson was in it. And I'm like, so I'm going to start because she can do no wrong.
Absolutely. She's also really good in American Gods. She was actually really great in that. The first season, at least.
Okay.
Yeah.
Put on my list.
There you go. So that's another one. In terms of your work, you mentioned that you try and look for representation, like you want to see proper representation in the work you pursue. Just tell me a bit about that.
Yeah. So you kind of asked earlier around like how I got into acting. And I said, you know, in my household, both my parents were teachers. And so if asked, that's what I would become. Media, television, movies, music, et cetera, play a really big part, I think, in how we can digest information and understand where we belong in the world. It helps us shape our identity. It really helps us figure out our path. And so growing up, I didn't have that many options. There weren't 100 shows on television telling me where I fit in. In fact, there were maybe 99 shows telling me that I didn't, and then one show telling me that I did. You know, I watched the Fresh Prince reunion episode the other day and spoke to a friend of mine and said, how did you like it? And my friend is white, and he's one of my best buds. And he was like, it was really good. And he was like, how did you like it? And I said, I cried through it. Like, I cried from beginning to end. Because what I recognized was that show showed up for me at a time and in a way that no one else and nothing else really did. And so when I speak about diverse representation, and I don't speak about it just racially or culturally, like right across the board, how you show up in the world often needs to be reflected back to you for you to understand how you're allowed to show up in the world. We as individuals want to figure out who we are. That's our quest. Who am I? And so much of the world spends its time telling us what we are. And so a show that allows me to show up as who I am is really important. And so when I speak about diverse representation, specifically also within the Hallmark spectrum, I think it matters that households are going to be playing these shows on repeat. And what they see needs to not look like just the homogeny of their home. It has to look like their entire neighborhood. It has to look like their province or state or city or whatever they live in, so that they can start to filter through new questions of who am I in relation to this?
Absolutely. This is a hard question to answer, I think, but is there a favorite role that you've had over the course of your career?
Yes, it's unfortunately a role that no one will ever get to revisit. But it's actually an easy question for me. So growing up, when I graduated from university, along with a few friends, I started this not-for-profit called Project Humanity that still exists today. We use art as a way to raise awareness. We make theater. And my dear friend, who was the artistic director and still is the artistic director of the company, Andrew Kushner, stumbled across this really big idea to create verbatim theater and bring it to Canada. I shouldn't say create, verbatim theater existed, to begin honing his craft in verbatim theater. And so we worked with a youth shelter in Toronto. And over the course of a period of time, we ended up creating this piece called The Middle Place. And The Middle Place was a lens into a youth shelter that allowed an outside audience to really get to know what the struggles of this transient lifestyle were and who were the people that ended up there and why, and start to break down biases and break down barriers of understanding or of class or economic differences or whatnot. And so we ended up touring it around Canada, around Ontario to a bunch of schools across Canada. We were in BC for a little bit, a couple stops along the way. And that was my favorite role because I got to dip in and out of five youth within the shelter system to help tell a story that I knew no audience could sit on the other side of without being completely transformed. And there were four actors on stage, but there were about 30 plus voices. And I think that hands down, that's the richest experience of my life in terms of art. Unfortunately, we never got to make a movie version, but
I guess next thing, you mentioned it earlier when I was talking about what you've been doing the past year, but so restaurants, you're part of a restaurant group. Tell me a bit about, you know, how you got involved in restaurants, why it's something that you like to pursue outside of acting.
Yeah. When I first got in, so my life is a series of green lights that I happened to follow. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always make me sound the most in control of my life, but I will say that like, I don't spend a lot of time sitting at a red light. If I'm at a red light, I'll make a right turn and go in a new direction. Mm-hmm. And really give over to the idea that, that the world can kind of lead you to the things you really truly desire if you're just listening. So my mother, as mothers do, told me I needed to get a job at a certain point. And she found out of this this new restaurant that was being built and was hiring. And she sent me down there in the cold with a resume. And she said, don't come back without a job. And I went down and there were no buildings. There was nothing there. It was an old heritage area called the Distillery District in Toronto. And I wandered around for like so long. We're talking like streets not paved, dirt, mud, like debris. There was no construction. There was no restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then there was a big truck and a guy in the truck was unloading chairs in the rain, looked miserable, not a happy dude. I knocked on the truck and I was like, hey, I'm here for a job. he did not find amusing at all. And I said, yeah. And I just told him the story. I was like, my mom told me I got to come get a job at a restaurant. I don't see the restaurant here. Can you tell me where to go? And he was like, man, the restaurant's not opening for like 8 months. Go away. And I said, well, what are you doing? And he said, I'm obviously unloading chairs in the rain, like just, you know, choice words, go away, but go away. And I said, I'll make you a deal. Like, why don't I just stay and unload the chairs with you? And if there's a job on the other side, you can hire me. And he was like, he just thought I was the dumbest kid. And I kept showing up and he was the general manager and he kind of made a deal. He said, listen, if this works out, I'll hire you as a busser, which I knew nothing about restaurants, but I knew that, you know, it probably wasn't good because I'd never heard of it before. And I said, I'll do all this stuff with you. You hire me as a busser. And if at the end of the month, I'm not the best busser you've ever seen, you can get rid of me. But if I'm the best, you have to make me the king of the bussers. And kind of rolled his eyes and said, sure. And gave me a job. That was my first restaurant job, like not even working in restaurants. but I got to work with the management team as they were setting up and building and whatnot. And that blossomed into like a series of opportunities where I did become the king of the busters and I got to hire all my friends and we got to like really run this operation from like inside in the bottom. And I learned a ton because the people that I was working side by side with were all the heads of the organization. So I got to learn things that I wouldn't have had access to otherwise, theory and philosophy, management strategies, things like that. And I knew that serving was useful as an actor. Because it gave me a lot of flexibility for auditions and I stayed in it, but I always made a deal with myself that I wouldn't be in it if I wasn't learning and I wouldn't remain in something that I was unhappy with. And so what it really forced me to do was to say, if I'm going to be in this business, how do I put hospitality on a pedestal and make sure that when I'm here, it gets every ounce of my attention, but that I can walk away and do this other thing. And so somehow I was able to split my mind in two and say, I do these two things full time for the rest of my life, and I love them both dearly. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting is it made me less hungry. I wasn't concerned if I wasn't acting because I had something that I loved, and if I was on set, I wasn't thinking about my restaurants because they'll be fine without me. So, mm-hmm. and I guess, you know, pushing forward to now, when I moved to Vancouver, I met up with one of my old friends, Andrew Jameson, who was in the middle of putting a restaurant together. He decided, I'm going to open a restaurant, and he had never done it before, but we've always been the people that get hired to help other people open theirs. So we just got the band back together and started doing things our way. And, you know, a lot of steep learning curve, but the one superpower that we have is we can just do the work. Doesn't matter if I don't know exactly how other people do it. What I know is I can think it through. I believe in myself and I'm not afraid of hard work. And everybody who sits at the table with us has that same brand marking. Mm-hmm. You know, like if it costs us 24 hours of being awake, then we're awake for 24 hours. Is there a way to do it faster and easier? Probably. And we'll learn it one day, but we get the job done.
Nice. I guess with COVID, it's, you know, hard to say what's coming next year, but what is on tap for you coming into 2021?
God, I have no idea. I mean, I wish I had answered that. There's just so much uncertainty. I mean, 2021, I don't know what's happening tomorrow. Like, Vancouver's in the middle of new restrictions and lockdowns look like they're coming. Mm-hmm. We'll see what that looks like as a result of it. Like quite literally right before this call, I was piecing together, you know, the rest of our strategy to move into takeout and to figure out if we're going to do take home kits as well. I'm still auditioning. So there's a bunch of those irons in the fire. Nothing's been shut down in Vancouver, at least that I know of on a large scale, but I hope we still have an acting industry that's doing well next year. There might be little dips that we encounter. I don't have anything booked beyond once I finish Mighty Ducks. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I'm waiting for the next green light. but really all I can say is on tap for me in 2021 is taking a hard look at kind of like how the family works and how the businesses work and how to make sure that we are remaining present and maintaining our connection and our community connection with each other so that regardless of what's happening out there, we're okay, and that the people that I'm connected to are okay, and that we remain in service to our community, both as a family, as a restaurant group, as neighbors and whatnot. Because I think that more than anything, that's what we need. That's the answer.
No, absolutely. I think it's true for a lot of us. And I guess the last question is, if people want to follow you, they want to know about what you're up to. They want to maybe see your website, things like that. Follow you on Twitter, Instagram, all those places. Where can they go?
To follow me, probably Instagram is the most accessible. Certainly. That's the one that I show up on the most. And it's just my full first and last name, as my handle, Antonio Caon. I also have a website. I won't lie, I'm not the best at updating it. I try. But, you know, there are so many things that are happening that it is one of the things that fall by the wayside. But I'm doing an update today. So at least it'll be current as of today.
As of today.
Those would be the two best places. And then I also show up on Twitter. Again, my handle's just my last name, Caon. Twitter is the one that I use the least. I'm learning to love it, but it's not a medium that I'm naturally connected to. But yeah, those are three spots that I exist in the world, at least virtually.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Antonio. And if you did, please leave a rating and review. You can reach me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can visit my website where you'll find hundreds of articles on Canada's history, as well as all my podcast episodes. Just go to canadaehx.com. And again, you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. If you'd like to find me on Facebook, go to www.facebook.com/CanadianHistoryX. You can find me on Twitter. My handle's Craig Baird, CraigBaird. And I'm on Instagram. Just search for Bairdo37. Thanks. We'll see you again next time.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.